Yahoo Fantasy Football Forecast.
It seems like you know ball the way you talk, so.
Thank you. Someone clip that.
I'm not playing in your league unless I can draft myself.
Outside of football, I live a pretty boring life.
With Matt Harmon.
This is an anti-getting greedy podcast here.
Been seeing you guys' podcast kind of blowing up here recently, so glad to get on.
It's Monday, February 27th, and we're here to talk about the best and potentially the worst position in football and fantasy football today with our good friend Dalton Del Don. Dalton, I'm sure you're thrilled to be talking on the wide receiver, you know, lessons learned episode today. And I kind of hope you aren't just completely dreading the tight end part that we have to stick at the end of this thing. But yeah, dude, we get to do the lessons learned on wide receivers together. I couldn't be more excited. Dalton, buddy, how you doing?
What's up, man? I'm excited as well. More pumped to just listen more than I am to talk, battling a cold, so that'll be easy. But yeah, man, I'm going to hear you, Mr. Reception Perception, tell me what's up with the receivers. And I have thoughts on guys like Gabe Davis as well. But and then, yeah, we'll get to tight ends, but that may be more brief. Don't worry, I won't get on you for trying to include them as your receivers that you're charting.
we'll get to that. There is definitely a reason that Andy Behrens is not a part of this program today, but we'll get to that later. Let's get down to business here. So if you've listened to the last two episodes, if you haven't, you should go listen to them. Andy covered the lessons learned on running backs, Scott on quarterbacks. Basically, our big structure is to go through kind of we did top 11 here for fantasy wide receivers in half PPR and a lesson learned for each guy. I think it's helpful to frame these discussions around a specific player, around a specific situation. Dalton, not to do the whole like, you know, who's this year's Justin Jefferson or who's this year's CeeDee Lamb or something like that. But I think it helps to frame the discussion around specific players, stuff like that. But before we get into the top 11 fantasy wide receivers and a lesson for each guy, let's kind of talk overall wide receiver lessons here. A theme I think, Dalton, that's going to pop up for a ton of these guys is not getting too hung up on situation or whatever, but like just trusting talent. And I know when I say that, there's going to be people out there that are immediately going to have examples of like, oh, well, what about this guy? What about this guy? What about that guy? What about Terry McLaurin? You trust the talent on Terry McLaurin. Like you only get wide receiver, you know, whatever he was this year, wide receiver, 22. I get it, but still, a lot of times if you focus on just the talent and not necessarily the projectable volume ecosystem for some of these guys, you ended up getting huge values. At least that's one big lesson, overarching theme for me at the wide receiver position this year.
My biggest takeaway that I've really learned is I'm going to try to be more agnostic to receivers dealing with switching teams and or quarterbacks. Yes. I really was too down on Tyreek Hill for getting away from Mahomes when Hill is just so good himself, clearly, at 8.9 yards per attempt, thanks to Hill and obviously Waddle. Devontae Adams, same thing. I was a little too down on him leaving Rodgers just because of new environment, but indoors, and it worked out just fine. Got a ton of targets. DK Metcalf and Lockett as well. I was way too down because of this. How did I know the quarterback position? It's just I was just assuming far too much about the unknown, and so many things can change weekly in the NFL, let alone during an offseason. So I'm going to remain more agnostic to these wide receivers with changing situations and the ADP, that's fine. The market, I'm going to be okay with it more so than I'm going to take a stand because, man, there's just so much when it comes to the unknown, I'm going to be willing to not have some firm stance.
I can't remember the exact number, but like last year, if you basically swore off, you know, I'm not touching any receiver that's playing with the different quarterback from the year prior. I think it was like half the guys in the top 24, or top 30 or something like that. I might even be gone a little further. I wish I had the number offhand, but you just jarred my memory on this. I'll maybe come up with it later, but it was like essentially half the guys drafted in the top like 34, 35 picks or something like that, that were changing teams or changing quarterbacks because there was so much quarterback turnover last year. And shoot, honestly, like we might get that again this year. So when we're talking about like free agency and stuff like that coming up and quarterback trades, you know, is Aaron Rodgers going to get traded? Where's Derek Carr going to sign? You know, we might get a similar turnover this year. That might just be a thing going forward in the NFL because I think a lot of teams are open to not just sticking it out with a bad quarterback. Like, maybe it gets better this year. Like, they're going to move that thing around a little bit. I think that's something that's going to be different going forward. And to your point about guys changing teams, this is something that I said when DeAndre Hopkins and Stephon Diggs changed teams in 2020. Was, you know, there was all this bad history about wide receivers changing teams. And like, you look at the history of wide receivers changing teams, they usually stink in their first year, at least their first year with a new team. But my counterpoint to that, and I honestly agree with you, I wish I hammered it more this past year with Tyreek Hill, Davante Adams, and A.J. Brown, was we haven't seen, prior to Hopkins and Diggs, we hadn't seen guys that were that good change teams, right? Like, I mean, the biggest examples were probably Odell Beckham and Antonio Brown. And, I mean, let's throw Antonio Brown out for a variety of different reasons, because he just went off the reservation. And then with Odell Beckham, he got hurt. There were some things there. But for the most part, it was guys like, you know, the late Vincent Jackson or Mike Wallace were like the biggest examples of wide receivers who had changed teams that were like, quote, big names in free agency. That's just a totally different ball game. Or Alshon Jeffrey going to the Eagles from the Bears in free agency. That's a totally different ball game than like guys that who are literally verifiably the best players at the position, the five best receivers in the NFL changing teams. That's a totally different thing, I think, than guys like in that Mike Wallace tier changing teams in free agency.
Where Wallace at? No, it's a great point. The contracts are different. The eras are different. It's totally just a different time in the NFL based on in the past. Yeah, the receivers often, very frequently, the first year with a new team were ones to avoid. Rookies, another big change.
Yes.
Rookie receivers used to be, no, not the first year. It's the third year breakout. Then it became the second year breakout. And last year may have been a special, truly special class, but it's been a few years now where rookie wideouts have helped fantasy managers down the stretch over the second half. It's been a good 2, 3, 4 years now. That's a theme. I'm targeting rookie wideouts now in best ball drafts, just without obviously knowing where they land, because that is something I expect to continue to be a theme moving forward, is immediate impact from these rookies. So that would definitely be another lesson I learned. Another takeaway is that these rookies are another thing that's different from past eras of football.
Yeah. And again, there's no such thing as a blanket statement, because like guys like Sky Moore didn't emerge in the second half of the year like I thought he might. George Pickens sort of slumped in the second half of the year and really was awesome in the first half. Drake London was killer to end the year after the quarterback change. Christian Watson, probably the best example of a guy who basically did nothing in the first half of his rookie year, but was awesome in the second half. So I agree with you, like, focusing on those rookie wide receivers, even if you're not the one that drafted them, always keep those guys sort of like on waiver wire speed dial, I think, is the biggest thing for me going forward. But all right, let's dive into it. Let's dive into 2022's top 11 fantasy wide receivers, starting at wide receiver one, Justin Jefferson. We don't have to spend a ton of time on him, because I feel like the lesson for him was he's just as good as we all thought, right? He even promised himself he was going to be the number one wide receiver. He was the number one wide receiver in PPR and half PPR, whatever. He was awesome. I don't know. Are there any other lessons to take away from Justin Jefferson's season other than, hey, he's I think a truly special talent at the wide receiver position, just heading into like his fourth season now?
Yeah, so frustrated. I searched many casinos in August trying to find a bet on him to win Offensive Player of the Year. Couldn't find one. Mm. But the last two games of the season, he kind of disappeared. So I guess the only thing I'd bring up is Jefferson or Chase. I took Chase with the number one pick. Just got in a slow best ball draft, considered my guy McCaffrey, and obviously Jefferson, and decided to go Chase. But Jefferson's awesome. He didn't quite take over the Cooper Kupp role as much. You would know that more than I would. But either way, he was schemed open enough. He's awesome. He's going to be a top three pick in all fantasy drafts next year.
Yeah, definitely was not in the Cooper Kupp role at all. I talked to him about that at Super Bowl media week, and you know, he had made those statements without actually seeing sort of the plan for his role yet, but he saw it more as the season unfolded. And I mean, honestly, like, you're just not going to put a guy that's as good, and no shade to Cooper Kupp, who would have been the number one receiver if we were doing this in points per game. He averaged like 18.2 half PPR points per game. He was, you know, absolutely absurd. If he hadn't gotten hurt, it's crazy that he was, I'm looking at it right now. He was still wide receiver 24 on total points, and he played like half, half the damn season. It was crazy. But, just on Justin Jefferson, he was, again, I think a little surprised by the fact that like the role that he had. But like I was saying, you don't take a guy who's as good as Justin Jefferson, who's such an elite press man coverage beater, who can win as that X receiver and can beat double coverage. You don't have to put that guy like 90% in the slot. I would say for Justin Jefferson going forward, what makes him really interesting kind of compared to a guy like Ja'Marr Chase is, are they going to get a second, like a secondary threat there in Minnesota? Because that was a big thing, like that Packers game in particular. That was week 17, right? In championship week, was the Packers game where he caught one pass?
Yeah, that sounds right. Yeah,
you watch that game and like their whole ball game was basically like pressure Kirk, but also take away Justin Jefferson basically at all costs. And they did a lot of creative things to do that, especially when he did line up in the slot. So
yeah, you were right. Yep.
I like Adam, like what Adam Thielen's done in his career, but I think they might be an interesting team, like a sneaky team to add wide receiver help this offseason.
Yeah, no, so yeah, Osborne, what can he, yes, totally agree that Thielen's on the back nine of his career. And Justin Jefferson's going to be in the beginning of a nice stretch here of dominating the league, man. He's fun to watch.
Since you brought up Ja'Marr Chase, he would have been wide receiver 12. And I just decided to cut this off at 11 because, like, I don't really know what there is to say about Ja'Marr Chase. He was wide receiver 12 despite playing only 12 games. He's awesome. I do think, like, we haven't even seen the best of him yet, man. My lesson for him is, like, he's, you know, especially talking to him Super Bowl Media Week, that guy's, like, really underrated in terms of his, like, technical ability in the game. We think about him as, like, a pure like ball winner, a yak guy, a big play threat. But I think he can have this Justin Jefferson type of season next year. So I love that you took him first overall there. I'm endorsing your draft pick there.
Yeah, you look at the targets down the stretch, and he was not probably playing compromised to a healthy full year from him could be special. I used to argue that Higgins should be ranked closer weekly, but clearly Chase separated himself there. I know Higgins might have been playing himself not 100%, but Chase, he's the man.
Higgins is great. I think Chase is just like, he's ready to take this Justin Jefferson leap in his third year.
Yep.
You're right that like we used to do the third year breakout for wide receivers. It can still be a third year breakout, but it can be a breakout going from like the very, very good of the position to like the elite of the position. I think that we saw that with Justin Jefferson. I think we're going to see that with Ja'Marr Chase.
Yeah, but thinking about the number one pick and taking Chase, as great as he is, man, I was just looking at like Marshall Faulk's old stats. He had 26 touchdowns and 2,000 yards in 14 games 1 year for the Rams. I mean, it's a different game we're playing right now without running backs like that. So, I mean, it really is different. But Chase is as good as it gets right now.
All right, wide receiver 2, Tyreek Hill. We talked about this a little bit with guys changing teams, but for me, the lesson here is that elite wide receivers are quarterback proof. And I'm not saying that Tua is not good. I think Tua is a good quarterback, but he's not Patrick Mahomes, despite all of the Tyreek Hill's offseason chatter. This trade ended up being great for everybody involved because the Chiefs and Patrick Mahomes proved they don't need Tyreek Hill. And Tyreek Hill, I think, also proved he didn't need Patrick Mahomes based on what he did this year.
Yeah, totally. The Chiefs somehow had the most yards per play on offense in 5 years without Hill. And Hill put up one of his best seasons. He had the most receptions, the most targets. I mean, yes, you get one more extra game these days, but he also played 17 games the season before with Kansas City. Touchdowns weren't quite there, but very, very impressive. And imagine a full year of a healthy Tua. So, yeah, I was way wrong. I didn't end up with a ton of Tyreek. I was just worried leaving Mahomes, and clearly that was just a gigantic mistake. I mean, the argument for him this year, I mean, you could rank him as high as any of these guys this year. His upside is as high as any of them.
100%. And I don't think we're going to see anybody in the Tyreek Hill, like all these guys here, like I don't think any of them are really changing teams this year. You know, I think I don't think we're going to get the crazy wide receiver movement this offseason that we did last offseason. That's for sure. But when, I mean, guys like Adams, probably we're going to talk about him in a second. He's going to have a new quarterback this year. These guys that are as good as Tyreek Hill, like you could throw anybody out there, I think, and they'll be great, because when you can get open at all levels, like you're going to be able to thrive in fantasy and reality and everything like that.
Yeah, they have the coaching staff to scheme him up too. So, I mean, yeah, yes. And Tyreek Hill, I think I just underrated how good he was, and at his size, you know, can he last this stage of his career? But yeah, the answer is yes, emphatically. Yeah, he just gets open at will. He's awesome.
Let's move to the next guy here, Davante Adams. Another one who changed teams, we know that. And for me, the lesson here is that guys can, when they're, again, maybe it's just the guys who are at this peak of the wide receiver position, but my lesson here is just like these guys can win in different ways with different quarterbacks. I know the biggest freak out about Davante Adams was that he was going to be changing from Aaron Rodgers to Derek Carr. But there was also like some level of freak out of like, oh, you know, think about all of the layup targets that Davante Adams got, those slot routes. I mean, if you look at it just this past year, Davante Adams in his last 2 years in Green Bay, 8.9 air yards per target, 9.55 air yards per target. In Las Vegas, it jumped to 11.8. And his slot snaps fell down. But my whole point about the freak out about the slot stuff is like, watch a guy play. Like, you think Davante Adams can't win as the X receiver? You think he can't win against press coverage, man coverage, outside routes? Obviously, those routes are harder. The throws are harder. They're more difficult. And his production was great on the whole, 1,500 yards, just like he had 1,500 yards the year before. But he got there in different ways, like only 100 catches this past year, 123 in Green Bay. So I think that's the lesson here for me, is that like these guys can end up at the same result, even if the way they get there is different, because, again, it just comes back to how they win and how they play the game.
Yeah, I overrated those concerns myself, including those layup touchdowns, which just were so easy with Rodgers. But obviously Carr and Adams put up big numbers in Fresno State, so it's not a shock getting to play indoors. He's just a total alpha, man. 14 touchdowns, very, very impressive. Haven't dropped our old favorite stat, Whopper, in a while, but second in the NFL and had a higher Whopper than his final season in Green Bay, too. So, yeah, the opportunity was there, and he certainly cashed in. The question with him now, obviously, is who's going to be his next quarterback.
Yeah, I probably won't worry about it, right?
Yeah, who cares? I guess there's not much of a question, really. I guess, just something we'll talk about, but he's good. He's either going to be ranked anywhere from 3 to 7. Seems to me like there's a big set. Maybe you'll have A.J. Brown in there, but him and Smith to me. But to me, you know, Diggs, Adams, Hill, CeeDee Lamb, Cooper Kupp, Justin Jefferson, and Chase, to me, is just a big tier. I love my guy Garrett Wilson right there, too. But that seven, to me, because A.J. Brown and Devontae Smith fight each other, I could see you arguing those, but to me, that seven, you could really flip any way you could. I mean, I know I have Diggs seventh now, and that's probably blasphemy, right? I mean, you probably hate that. So, I mean, but again, we're talking Adams and Hill and CeeDee Lamb. Did you see him down the stretch? I mean, and Cooper Kupp. I mean, it's a pretty awesome seven.
You would know this better than anybody. Davante Adams, 152 yards and 2 touchdowns against your 49ers with Jarrett frickin' Stidham, bro. I mean, yeah, he's definitely a quarterback-proof guy. I think we're going to go back and forth a lot on wide receiver rankings. It's so hard to do it. Real life, fantasy, whatever. But I agree with you. I think that seven definitely kind of sets itself up as a tier unto its own.
In person, I don't think I've ever seen anything more impressive than Rodgers and him at a Niner game, and Adams like just breaking the ball would be released before it was like, it was crazy. You double team him. And I know you say no one really does double team, but I swear they were that day and it didn't matter. He's awesome.
Yeah. Guys,
and I know you
guys
you
that good like definitely, yeah, guys that good definitely get double teamed, but not as much as people think, but definitely in games like that, it can happen.
His workout metrics do not obviously jump off the page, and he struggled early on in the NFL career, but you've been calling him the best receiver in football for a few years now. And I'd say that you really were validated leaving that environment with Rodgers and going to a completely new system and, you know, getting paid and then looking like that, to me, is like validation. Yeah, the dude's obviously legit.
100%. I think he is still the best receiver in football. And the crazy thing about Adams, I always bring this up just because it's like the outlier of all outliers. This guy literally in reception perception went from like the first percentile in success rate versus man coverage in his first 2 years all the way to like the 99th for, you know, essentially 3 to 4 straight years. I haven't done the charting from this past year, but his last 4 years in Green Bay, even dating back to 2018, that is like just a blistering run that we've never seen. So for a guy to, it's just a credit to him for working his ass off and just being so dedicated to that, because you're right. It wasn't as if he's not some freak athlete. He's not Calvin Johnson. He's not Tyreek Hill. He's not even like a Jalen Waddle type in terms of his athletic ability. He's just like the consummate craftsman and the consummate technician. And I think that's going to be really interesting for a lot of these guys, like how their game ages, because I think he might lose a little bit of juice, but he could probably still get open with the best of them because of his route running.
Yep. He's awesome.
Speaking of getting open, like the best of them, Stephon Diggs is our next one here. For me, wide receiver 4, Stephon Diggs, it's don't get too caught up on the flashy things. You know, we spent so much time in the offseason, not just on this show, although we did talk about our buddy Gabe Davis a lot on this show, Isaiah McKenzie, you know, all of these guys. My whole point with Stephon Diggs was like, well, like we're talking about Gabe Davis. How much is he going to take on? We're talking about Isaiah McKenzie as the slot receiver. My thought was like, well, what if the answer just becomes more Stephon Diggs? And that's, I mean, essentially what happened. You know, he was incredibly productive his first 2 years in Buffalo, but he had a higher target share or higher targets per route run this past year than he did in 2021. His target share jumped from 26.3 to 27.9. His air yards were pretty similar. But yeah, overall, like, we just saw more of the offense go through Diggs, which I think was kind of a problem at times for Buffalo, but for his fantasy stock, it was a great thing.
First, I'll start off by defending my Gabe Davis egregiously high ranking. I was not basing it off his eruption in a playoff game in which busted coverage helped result in a couple of those three touchdowns. He also led Buffalo in first down target percentage after their bye in 2021. Emmanuel Sanders had left. He was extremely young for a prospect. Prospect guys I trust really liked him, especially one person who's done me right in the past. He had this crazy off-season routine. If you watch the video, he hired a personal chef, like basically just spent his whole off-season just living, eating, and breathing football. It's the most pass-heavy team in football, the Bills. But my lesson learned is I should have listened to my podcast partner who spends a lot of his free time watching players run routes. And I should have realized that Diggs is far better in that area. And I was overrating those other things. And yeah, Gabe Davis, I was flat out wrong. And Diggs is in this elite top tier.
Yeah, I mean, we've talked about the Gabe Davis thing so many times. Wide receiver 27 on the season. You know, I had him ranked as like wide receiver 30. You know, I do feel Gabe Davis is one of these weird players that I don't know if he will ever be associated with reception perception, like when people think about it. But from his like rookie year to all the way to this past season, I feel like RP has been like dead right about like where he is as a player. Cause when he was like first popping, I was like, oh, this is a guy who he might not be a fully trusted player, but he's a great deep threat. I think that's basically what he's become. Buffalo is going to be really interesting. Cause like, I think they probably spend a premium pick on wide receiver. I think they probably take a guy maybe in round one, round two. Maybe they add a free agent receiver, but they're not necessarily just flush with resources. But we could, Dalton, we could be looking at like Gabe Davis almost as like a post-type sleeper in a way that if they don't bring in, because like if they bring somebody in to be like a Jacoby Myers type, I don't think they'll do that, but just like a slot receiver type. Well, they're going to kick Isaiah McKenzie to the curb. He's going to be in that role. And Gabe might be back as just like a pure outside receiver. And if he goes like in the 30s and you could project him for 800 to 900 yards and seven-ish touchdowns, I mean, that might be kind of great depending on where he goes next year.
I am curious what Buffalo does at wide receiver. The only receivers under contract in 2024, Diggs and Khalil Shakir. But no, I will not be talking myself into the Gabe Davis fantasy business in 2023. I'm out on that one.
We'll see, man. I mean,
it's a long
off season, Dalton. I think we can get you back in on Gabe Davis. If nobody else, they don't add any competition there. I think we can get you back in. Let's move to wide receiver five here. AJ Brown. This one's, I think we're again, talked about at the top. It's a great, great case for just trusting talent. If you just closed your eyes and said, I get it. There are quarterback questions with Jalen Hurts. There are offense questions with the Eagles, whatever. What I know is that AJ Brown is a top five wide receiver talent. And again, I'm not running an ad here for reception perception, but he's been like top three in success rate versus man and press coverage in each of the last 3 years. He is a verifiable top five wide receiver talent. If you just trusted that, and you drafted AJ Brown everywhere, I mean, you would have gotten a huge profit based on where he was going. He wasn't going late or anything like that, but he certainly was never going like wide receiver five or projecting for these type of stats.
Yeah, maybe my lesson is overrating my ability to estimate injuries. Definitely was worried about his durability. Dude stayed totally healthy. And yeah, I was in on Hurts. So this does not shock me. The concentration of just going to Smith and him, even with Goddard as an option there, was just so good for fantasy managers. And even then, the whole second half of games, I believe he literally ranked like 33rd among quarterbacks, Hurts, in dropbacks. Like, they just played the whole season leading. So there's a lot of volume upside moving forward for both these receivers. Because they're not going to, that doesn't happen in the NFL. You know, they're not going to be playing with the lead like that. They're going to be trailing and not win as many games, and it's just inevitable. And that's going to help their volume, if nothing else.
100%. That's a great call out. And, you know, for Jalen Hurts, like, this is a guy who has gotten better every single season, like over the last 4 years or whatever. He could easily be a guy that takes another step. That would be great to see. And the concentration thing is another great point that, like, if you can identify these offenses where it's mostly going to flow through, and they're going to be efficient, but they're going to flow through like three dudes in the air. I mean, that's just money in fantasy. As much as we love like what the 49ers have assembled in terms of like a cast of characters, I got to get a 49ers reference in here somewhere, Dalton. You know, you get it, like a cast of characters like they've got. It can be tough on a weekly basis to be like, all right, who's going to get left out in the cold? Because they've got like four or five dudes that everything can flow through. Whereas with Philadelphia, it's just three guys through the air. If you can identify those offense, that's a great way to find some value going forward.
Yeah, so what are we doing with Brown and Devonta Smith? I guess Smith got injured in the Super Bowl. He was just seen in a walking boot weeks later. But aside from that, they had the same exact target share in the playoffs. In fact, Devonta Smith out-targeted A.J. Brown in six of the final eight games. I mean, it's an interesting debate. Or am I off base and A.J. Brown is a clear one step above? I really should just default to you here and not even care about these stupid stats, frankly. I'm being serious with that.
Oh, I appreciate it. But let's save like Devonta Smith for when we get to him, because he's going to come up on this list.
A tease. Let's tease it. I like it.
What I will say, though, is that I'm not sure. Like, I think the narrative about Devonta Smith is like, oh, he benefited from being the second fiddle. You know, he benefited from being like all of the coverage going A.J. Brown's way and that opening things up for him. I don't think that's necessarily true. And I don't think there's as much. And I just said A.J. Brown's like a top five wide receiver talent. I'm not sure there's a big gap between A.J. Brown and Devonta Smith. So I think it's worth a discussion. And it's a discussion we're going to have here in just a second. We're going to take a quick break. We're going to get to that more on the other side. But we got a lot of other dudes to talk about before we get back to Devonta Smith right after this. All right, Dalton, we're back. Wide receiver six, CeeDee Lamb. I think we talked a lot about CeeDee Lamb this past offseason. I think we were both kind of dead on about CeeDee Lamb, the player he was. And that's the lesson for me here. Like, hate to say it, but like, watch the tape when projecting players. Watch these guys play, especially when circumstances change. So much of the narrative around CeeDee Lamb was, well, he's never been an alpha receiver before. How come he's never had this target share? How come he's never had this, that, and the other? Well, you know, no shit, he hadn't had those things. He was playing with Amari Cooper. You know, Michael Gallup was healthy for the most part that he was playing. That was not going to be the situation at all this year. And if you just highlighted on what the guy could do when you actually sit down and watch him, not like all of these make-believe metrics, the guy could do it all, especially in the role that he was projecting, which was kind of that like power slot role. But I would even argue that we saw against the 49ers in the playoffs, like, he can stack and win against man coverage on the outside. Like, he can be a vertical receiver. Like, I think they can get even more about out of CeeDee Lamb going forward. But yeah, for me, the lesson here is just like, you got to actually watch these guys when projecting like what their ceiling might be, not necessarily like volume metrics from the past.
Yeah, I have to admit, I was worried. I had him ranked aggressively high. And after week one, he had 11 targets, just two catches, 29 yards. I'm like, oh, is he not up to the task of being the clear alpha? And he certainly was down the stretch after the bye week, especially. He just really erupted, saw all the targets. Is it some concern? Maybe Gallup is fully recovered from the knee this second year, so he gets more targets, but not really. I mean, there's not really much target. There's really not target competition there after they gave away Amari Cooper stupidly. So I think CeeDee Lamb, yeah, again, has an argument among these seven, whatever, next year indoors. Dak Prescott doesn't run as much anymore. I mean, it's a great setup. I mean, it's Pollard coming off an injury, Zeke, you know, another year older. Lamb, again, he's right there with any of these seven that could finish as the fantasy's top wideout next year.
Yeah, I think Dallas's kind of approach this offseason, like the receiver core is going to be really interesting. They're probably going to let Dalton Schultz walk. I think they can you know, no offense to the Daltons out there, but I think they can probably do just fine with like Jake Ferguson or somebody else at tight end.
There's another baller Dalton entering the league, I think, a tight end prospect too,
yeah,
man.
Dalton,
why are they
Kincaid?
All named Dalton? Yeah, they're all named Dalton. There was another failed one on, I think, the Patriots too. I don't understand. It's weird, but yeah, Kincaid. Yeah, I'm hearing good things about him.
I think what we're learning here is that you really missed the boat. You should have, like, I don't know, packed on 100
twice
more,
my weight.
Yeah, I was gonna say like 100 more pounds and been a tight end, bro. I mean, you're pretty tall, so you could have been like a move tight end. You could have maybe been in the Jordan Reed mold.
Yeah, I do not have my daughter's athleticism, nor do I like taking a hit. I agree with P&L said he would never be the same if he took one hit in the NFL, and I agree too. My life would never, ever again be the same. So yeah, it's not for me. I'm more of a hoopster or playing golf these days. Yeah, not built for it. But Dalton Schultz probably is moving on, leaving even more of the targets for CeeDee Lamb. I mean, T.Y. Hilton, is he coming back? I mean, Jalen Tolbert, remember when he was being drafted in the top 10
man.
Rounds in the middle of summer? I mean, wow. So yeah, it's about as wide open, actually, if you look at it, as any team right now for Lamb as far as targets.
Totally wide open. I think the Odell Beckham thing might actually happen this offseason for as much as we talked about it. But again, like then you're looking at CeeDee Lamb and like two guys that are probably on the back nine of their career in Gallup and Beckham, who are still dealing with ACL. Although Gallup's younger than I think people realize, but he's still a guy that would be, we don't know what he's going to look like in his second year off an ACL tear. Pryor will look better. Beckham will be coming off his second ACL tear on the same knee. So yeah, I mean, I don't know that there's a move unless this whole, you know, the Diggs bros get their wish and they get to play together. I don't know that there's a move that the Cowboys could make that would really have me dinging CeeDee Lamb too much coming into this year. And I agree with you that he has the upside to be the number one receiver in fantasy, no question about it.
Yep, absolutely love him.
All right, next guy here, wide receiver 7, Jalen Waddle. To me, there's...
Wait, sorry. Do we worry about McCarthy calling plays? Sorry. I actually need to ask you that. Kellen Moore, I mean, that's kind of just overlooked. I mean, I feel like he was the last of their problems.
Worries. I agree with you. Kind of like the least of their worries. I think that was definitely a move that, like, all right, if I'm going to go out, if I'm Big Mike and I'm going out my way, you know, type of thing. I think it was a move to, I honestly think it could have been like a bit of a mutual move. The fact that he picked that Chargers job up so fast, did Kellen Moore from like when it was announced to, you know, I think that could have been kind of in the works beforehand. But, you know, again, CeeDee Lamb, another guy we talked to at Media Week, he seems pretty excited about the move. And he said, you know, I think Dak told Jory Epstein, our colleague, that like it might be, you know, maybe 20% different in terms of what they'll do. I think, honestly, part of me wonders like how much do we really separate? Like how much can we separate Kellen Moore from Mike McCarthy? Because I think instinctually we sit there and think like, oh, all the good must have been Kellen Moore and all the bad, that's got to be Mike McCarthy, right? That's got to be Mike McCarthy meddling. But I don't know. I think that Mike McCarthy, whether things definitely went stale, I think that offense does make things harder on the quarterback than it needs to be. I do think that's some Mike McCarthy stuff there, but he's still a guy that has been a coordinator for a long time and a guy who's called plays before. So it's not like a totally unknown thing. So I would say my worry level about it is pretty low.
Okay, totally fair. I just wanted to bring that up because
it's worth it, that makes
sense. That makes sense to the whole Moore connection with the Chargers too, because that was pretty quick. So yeah, that's fair.
All right, next guy up here, wide receiver 7, Jalen Waddle. Obviously, we talked a lot about Tyreek Hill and Tua and stuff like that, but to me, the lesson from him is that like coaching changes can do wonders for wide receivers. Do you remember the little pop gun role that Jalen Waddle was in as a rookie? I mean, it's crazy to think about like a guy that had that legit speed. And I don't think he was 100% healthy his entire rookie year because he was coming off a pretty late ankle injury in the latter part of the college football season the year prior. But still, 104 catches, 1,015 yards, 9.76 yards per reception his rookie year. His second season, way fewer targets, but 75 catches for 1,356 yards, 18.1 yards per catch, Jalen Waddle. His like average depth of target or air yards per target to yards after catch per reception numbers are just ridiculous with Jaylen Waddle. Like, that's some video game stuff. 12.1 air yards per target, 6.8 yards after catch per reception. There is probably some regression worry in that going forward. But for me, my lesson here is just like, yeah, coaching changes can really open up what we think of a player.
Yeah, I remember a knee scare in August had me concerned drafting him, proved to be nothing, played all 17 games. And yeah, you highlighted, it's just all about A-Dot here. I mean, the dude had 30 fewer catches, but 350 more yards. I mean, just what a dramatic difference. And you know, props to him for showing the skills to do that. I wasn't clear if he was just an underneath guy, but clearly not. He's a beast. He benefits from another concentrated target tree there in Miami and an awesome Hall of Fame, one-of-a-kind receiver opposite him. So even if Tua is not the world's best deep ball thrower, proved plenty accurate enough, hopefully he can stay healthy. I mean, 8.9 YPA last year, I don't think people understand. I mean, that's like historically good. So hopefully Tua can stay healthy. And you look at Waddle and Hill, and this is an offense cooking with gas for years to come.
Yeah, I mean, it's a credit to your boy Mike McDaniel in between vape hits. Like, he really definitely watched the tape on Jaylen Waddle, like dating back to his college days. He was anything but like a little pop gun receiver in college, and he definitely showed. I always was just kind of weird to me that, I guess it's because they had Tua in this weird RPO offense in 2021, and you know, lack of protection, that type of stuff. But it was always weird to me that he was, and again, his own health maybe, but it was weird that he was in that little role his rookie year when he can obviously do this, what we saw in 2022.
Yep. No, McDaniel can definitely coach and scheme. Can we see a similar upgrade to DJ Moore as far as differences downfield? Are they similar players, or he's capable of this, or am I off base on that?
Definitely not the same in terms of speed. But you remember in like 2020, the Teddy Bridgewater year, DJ Moore had like 18 yards per catch, something like that. And they were using him as a vertical X receiver, which I don't think is the best thing for DJ Moore. I think you want him being like a guy who moves around, flanker, slot, that type of stuff. I think you could, but I think he can take a similar leap under a guy like Frank Reich, you know, and it's just so much better coaching than, you know, Matt Rhule and the boys previously.
I selfishly brought him up. Sorry if it doesn't make any sense with Waddle, but that kind of the comparison made sense in my head. But selfishly, I bring it up because I jumped way ahead of ADP and took Mike Williams over DJ Moore in this best ball draft. But I'm looking at the whopper I brought up for this podcast last year. Moore easily led the NFL in whopper. He was number one. And then it's Devontae Adams, Tyreek Hill, AJ Brown, you know, the stars. Yeah. But my thought process with Mike Williams is Keenan Allen's a huge cut. I think he's definitely going to be released. And they added Kellen Moore, so I should have brought it up then. Kellen Moore there, and you look at the splits there, Williams could be an absolute beast. I think he's in essentially his contract year too. So with Herbert throwing him the ball, and the question we still remains for DJ Moore, with those coaching upgrades still though, who's the quarterback there? So that was my thinking. But looking at this whopper has me like really second-guessing that.
I think both those teams could add competition for targets as well. I know that, yeah, Keenan Allen's probably a guy who I think is either going to get released or traded or, you know, restructured maybe, but it's tough. There's no way he's playing on his current contract, that's for sure, for a cap strap team like the Chargers, who still have Justin Herbert's, you know, big contract to worry about here soon. If they walk into next year with Mike Williams and Josh Palmer as the two receivers, like, forget it. Like, they gotta figure something else out there at the receiver room for the LA Chargers. And DJ Moore, too, like, there's a big reason that he led the league in whopper or whatever.
There's nobody else there.
Like, you know, and I'm going to talk about this with our next guy. Like, I do believe targets are earned, but definitely who you're playing with affects like the level of volume you're going to get and stuff like that. They don't just throw to DJ Moore just because they throw to DJ Moore because he's good, but they throw to him so much. There's so much opportunity because, like, I think Terrace Marshall still pretty far unproven player. Robbie Chosen Anderson, whatever the hell he's calling himself, you know, these days, gets himself kicked off the team week six or whatever. So yeah, lot going into that as well.
Totally. Okay, fair. All right, move on. Sorry.
Those are two really interesting guys in terms of like what they're going to do this year. But we'll have a lot of time to talk about that all through the offseason. Wide receiver 8. Amon-Ra St. Brown up from wide receiver 21 the year prior. I mean, talk about like you could really old takes expose a lot of people on what they were saying about Amon-Ra St. Brown. And to me it's just like splits happen. That's a big thing here, like the splits for Amon-Ra St. Brown, all the volume stuff from his rookie year was without T.J. Hockenson, without DeAndre Swift, you know, all those wide receivers, like who else was he playing with? But like he was getting those targets, he was producing with those targets. because he was so good at football and is so good in the role that I think is evolving for wide receivers these days, which is that like big power slot type of player. So for me, the whole like target competition thing, I know we just said that a little bit about DJ Moore, but like the whole target competition thing doesn't matter as much. If you can get that volume and you can produce with it, there's a reason, and it's probably going to be sticky.
A lot of things here. So he is both legit himself, but things also kind of broke his way as well with Hawkinson getting traded midseason and DeAndre Swift, just whatever happened with him. I mean, he just
look at what he was doing the first like few weeks of the season. That was some of his best before Hawkinson got traded.
Yeah, that's
honestly fair,
because he got hurt. No, yeah, you're right. Yeah. Sun God could have been even better, but he dealt with an injury and he was playing with kind of a banged up ankle there. No, I'm a full on believer. He's awesome. And I've already gone on record here saying that the Lions, you know, are absolutely one of my dark horse Super Bowl candidates next year. So I think their offense is awesome. It's Coors Field, especially in Detroit. And on one hand, Jameson Williams looks like a real target competition next year that wasn't there. But, you know, Hawkinson is gone and whatever. There's no one else really there. And I think this offense can put up a ton of points. And I say that with a straight face with Goff throwing to him. So, yeah, I really like St. Brown, but it will be different with Jameson Williams there.
Definitely. Depends if they bring back DJ Chark as well, who I think was pretty good for them, especially in that back half of the year. He had some big games. Also another lesson for him is like quarterback and wide receiver relationship and fit together really matters. Like that was one of the reasons I liked Amon-Ra St. Brown so much. Besides his talent, was like, we've seen Jared Goff thrive with this type of wide receiver. You know, I called him Bud Light Cooper Kupp all the time, Amon-Ra St. Brown, but like they win in the exact same ways. And like, I think St. Brown's even catching up in terms of how good he is to a guy like Cooper Kupp. So that matters a lot too. When you can get a wide receiver quarterback relationship right, based on the style of their play, that you can end up in a top 10 season like this one. Next guy here, wide receiver 9, Amari Cooper. This one probably surprised me the most that he's here, especially because most of his big games were with Jacoby Brissett, which I definitely, and maybe there's a lesson in that. But for me, it's just like, this is pretty easy. Projectable volume is huge. This was a situation where they had David Njoku, Donovan Peoples-Jones did some whatever things, but for the most part, he was like the only wide receiver in town for the Browns last year.
Yeah, this was surprising to see him top 10 volume help just staying healthy, which is ironic for his career. But on a per game basis, I think Cooper was more like the 15th or 16th fantasy wideout, but still definitely was profitable with his ADP. And you said it was surprising. Most would have probably guessed the opposite would have been true. He would kind of thrive down the stretch with Watson, but his bigger games were early. And that's definitely a question entering next year is which Deshaun Watson's going to show up. But yeah, Cooper's good, and he benefits from a little target competition there as well. And the home road splits are just so bizarre too.
So bizarre. I'd almost say that like him being this high is sort of like, you know, it's definitely some big game induced stuff like that. The home road thing, like I think you got to be okay with volatility, even if it looks so like easy to pinpoint there, like the home road stuff. He is a volatile player. I've said that about him all the time. He did have 4 catches for 105 yards and 2 touchdowns with Deshaun Watson in week 17. But yeah, like the game against Buffalo, that was where he had 113 and 2. You know, 94 yards against Tampa Bay. That was Jacoby Brissett's last start. 131-1 against Cincinnati. That was Jacoby Brissett. Back to back in weeks 2 and 3, 101 yards and a touchdown on double digit targets. Both of those games were with Jacoby Brissett. That's probably a lesson there too, that like, even if you have a quarterback question, and Brissett definitely outkicked expectations this year, but even if you have quarterback questions, if you can still project a guy for like 24% of the targets, bare minimum, who cares? Like they could almost be playing with anybody and it'll probably be fine.
Looks like he hit 90 yards 6 times this year and 5 of them were with Brissett. So yeah, I don't know. I mean, obviously Watson, they're hoping makes a big leap here with the whole, you know, offseason to get ready. But yeah, Cooper, real strong fantasy pick last year.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know. We'll see with the whole Watson thing. I don't really have a ton of confidence in that. But yeah, 26% target share this past year. That was pretty big for Amari Cooper, something he had never done before. Wide receiver 10, Devontae Smith.
That's right. He had never had more than 21.9, right? Well, yeah, that was part of the argument. Yeah, wow.
But that comes back to exactly what I said about CeeDee Lamb, where it's like, no, he didn't have like 26% of the target, because he was playing with CeeDee Lamb and Michael Gallup and all of these other, and like they, Dallas always has one of the Daltons at tight end, you know, some random guy who's just super productive. And even back to his Raiders days, he was playing with Michael Crabtree, who I think people still underrate in terms of how good he was as an NFL player. So yeah, it's like target competition does matter for these guys, but there was no scenario where Amari Cooper was going to have like a 21% target share because DPJ was going to have like, you know, a big role on the team or something like that. David Bell, the rookie receiver, was going to come in there. Yeah, so like targets can be influenced by circumstances, no doubt about that. Even if they are, as a general standard, they are earned targets. Speaking of a guy who earned targets, Devontae Smith, wide receiver 10. We teased it earlier. He was up from wide receiver 30 the season past. Again, I think the narrative on him will be, well, he just really opened things up, you know, because AJ Brown was there. The thing with the Eagles that actually is a unique situation is they put so much stress on you as a defense, because you can't really realistically double one of these wide receivers, because then you're taking eyes off Jalen Hurts as a rusher, or you're taking guys out of the box as just a general run defense player. And then like they'll crush you with that offensive line and Miles Sanders and Kenny Gainwell and all those folks. So there's no real good answer to defending the Eagles. But to me, the lesson for him was, and this is a lesson for myself, because I got this wrong. This is one where I was totally off on Devontae Smith, not the player. I loved the player, loved the route running ability. His RP profile was great, but I didn't draft him in a single league, buried him in rankings because I was so sure that the Eagles were going to run back basically the same offense that they had last year. Even if I was like, Jalen Hurts can get better, they're still going to be super run heavy. And I was just totally wrong about that. So the lesson here is leave open the possibility that you might be wrong when projecting team play calling. Because if you are wrong, you could end up with a huge season like Devontae Smith, who is a verifiable talented stud.
Yeah, I made the same mistake. I just thought that AJ Brown coming into town, he'll be the clear alpha. There's also Goddard there in a run first team. Even though I was a believer in Hurts, I still didn't end up with much Smith. So my question remains, though, next year, Smith, you know me, he's a whole 1 year younger than AJ Brown. So I'm going to be all over him in the age model. But Smith is obviously very small. You know, people worried about him entering the NFL. So there's a durability concern there. But again, over the final second half of the year, final eight games, Devontae Smith out-targeted AJ Brown in six of them, had a 31% target share over those eight games, and had the same target share in the postseason as Brown. So I don't know. I think it's worth a debate. Or maybe, again, you said maybe... maybe it's not. Maybe AJ Brown is, you know, has a longer track record. He's bigger, more likely to score touchdowns. Maybe most will settle in with him going ahead of them in most drafts. I'm not sure.
Definitely worth a debate. I think it's worth a discussion. Like, I think this is the new DK Metcalf and Tyler Lockett, where, you know, even this past season, Lockett was more productive, right, than DK Metcalf. Tyler Lockett outscored DK Metcalf in fantasy this year. I think that's, like, that's possible for these guys, right? Like that could definitely happen this year. Like Devontae Smith could be better than AJ Brown. Not because he is better or is more talented, but like he's just good. I mean, like, I think these guys are very close. Like Devontae Smith is that good that this could be like a super concentrated receiver core as well. Like, I don't necessarily see them investing a ton of resources in a third wide receiver. You know, Dallas Goedert's under contract and he's like the oldest guy on this offense. And he's like 28, 29 years old. So to me, no, yeah, I think that they can be like that new Metcalf and Lockett where people will, cause people are just sizists. People are, you know, whatever. They'll always focus in on AJ Brown and they should. Like I said earlier in the podcast, AJ Brown is a top five wide receiver talent. He is that good. Just like with DK Metcalf, we'll look at the size and the speed. He's obviously better. And then Lockett is literally, at worst, his equal. He might even be a little bit better. And Devontae Smith could certainly be that guy this year and going forward as well.
That's a good comp. I like that comparison.
All right. Next one up here, wide receiver 11, Christian Kirk. Last one we're going to do before we have to talk about tight ends for a second. Christian Kirk, man, I mean, there's so many lessons here to take away. It's just like, number one, don't care about money. It's not your money. Why are you so outraged that Christian Kirk is getting paid what he's getting paid? Who cares? Shad Khan and the boys down there in Jacksonville, they can afford it. It's fine. Let them pay Christian Kirk what they're going to pay him. But for real, it was like mostly, I think people faded him mostly because that contract was so ridiculous. But the projectable volume was huge for Christian Kirk. And again, the talent was there too. That's what I think got lost in the whole contract discussion. It's not like they paid some bum, you know, a bunch of money. Like Kirk, he's a pretty good player, and he was a pretty good player for Jacksonville and ended up turning in a great season.
Yeah, even though I was wrong on other receivers changing teams, this one I was high on Kirk. Just I followed the money, the big contract, even if I didn't agree with the amount, whatever, they gave him it. And there were very little competition there. And I was hoping, you know, Lawrence would take a leap. So happy with Kirk's performance this last year, although I will say he was very reliant upon slot corners, opposing slot corners. He was one of the receivers you could kind of predict, really, when he was going to go off or not, or at least to the extent you can any NFL wide receiver. Next year, totally different ball game with Calvin Ridley entering the picture. Kirk is clearly good and maybe not worth the entire contract, but maybe he was worth it. Whatever. Fantasy wise, top 12 where he went in drafts was a huge, huge profit.
I mean, yeah, I definitely think he was worth it, right? Like, because ended up being such a huge threat for Jacksonville and exactly the type of player they needed because
they won a playoff game. Yeah, they came back from a huge, totally. He was worth it. What am I talking about? Right.
They won a damn playoff game. And also, like, you just look at the receipt, like, I think Jacksonville, maybe they didn't see this coming. They're like the receiver market absolutely exploding. But Christian Kirk got $18 million a year. You know, Kenny Galladay the year prior got $18 million a year. Tyler Lockett's at 17. You know, Deontay Johnson's like at 18.3 or 18.4. You know, then you look at the guys like Tyreek Hill's making 30 a year. Devontae Adams, 28 a year. You know, Stephon Diggs, 24 a year. DK Metcalf, 24 a year. Your guy Deebo Samuel, he's in that range as well. Terry McLaurin's in that range. Like, that contract doesn't look crazy at all, really, in hindsight. And when you're the best player available at a position in free agency, even if you're not, you know, one of the top five players at the position in real life, you're gonna get paid. You know, so Jakobi Meyers this year, like he's gonna be the Christian Kirk this year, guy that gets a ton of money. People are gonna lose their mind about Jakobi Meyers get like $20 million a year potentially. He's the best receiver on the market. Like he's gonna, and he could go to a team and have a Christian Kirk season because again, he might not be. Great. Kenny Galladay, I just said this earlier, he's at $18 million a year because he was the best receiver available in free agency the year the Giants signed him. Like Jakobi Meyers is probably going to get that contract. He could go and have a Christian Kirk type season, even if he's not a top 12 wide receiver real life in the NFL. He could have a top 12 fantasy season because he's good at football and he's going to get paid a lot of money in the next few months.
And Meyers, another slot guy too.
Yep.
it's a real fine comparison there. So yeah, no, you're right. I backtrack. I was wrong. Kirk, well worth the money. And it's a good signing. And I can't wait to see this offense next year, man. I'm really high on ETN and yeah, it's going to be fun. If Ridley's who he was the last time we saw him, hopefully.
I know. I keep saying to myself, I'm sure I've already said it on the pod, but like, you know, I'm really trying to not get like overexcited about Calvin Ridley. But then you go back and you watch Calvin Ridley, like the last time he played when statistically he wasn't having his best year in 2021. He was obviously out of the, God, he's still so good. He's like exactly what they need, man. Like an outside the numbers, vertical separator. There's definitely like a poor man's Stephon Diggs, Josh Allen type of jump that these two guys can make together in Calvin Ridley and Trevor Lawrence. But that's putting a lot on him, a lot on a guy who hasn't played in 2 years. And I think honestly, in that way, maybe Kirk could end up being a value in fantasy drafts because people might get caught up on Ridley. But Kirk's the guy who is going to get the easier targets. He's going to get the easier coverage as that slot guy. And he's already got that baked in chemistry with Trevor Lawrence, which I think does matter for a guy like Christian Kirk. All right. We've waited long enough. We don't have to spend a ton of time on tight ends, man. But what did we learn about tight ends in 2022? We're not going to go through the entire top 10 of tight ends this year, you know, and we don't need to learn a lesson from every single tight end in 20. Like, do you need a lesson for Dalton Schultz at tight end 10? Do you need a lesson for Tyler Higbee at tight end 9? Do you need a freaking lesson on tight end 11, Juwan Johnson? I don't think you do. But what did we learn overall at tight end in this past year, Dalton? And how do we project that mess of a position going forward?
Yeah, personally, I learned a couple things. One, probably not to fade Kelce playing with the greatest quarterback of our generation without Tyreek Hill there now. So that was not an ideal situation to fade, even if he was a little washed. It didn't matter. I was dead wrong on that regardless. That said, if I didn't like him then, I'm really not going to like him as a 34-year-old and with Kansas City likely upgrading at the wide receiver position and costing a first-round fantasy pick. So I don't really know a lesson learned I don't know, I'll probably repeat said mistake this year. I'm really in a greater, bigger picture. I'm not going to talk myself into tight end ever again. I repeatedly make that mistake. I mean, even right now on paper, I could form an argument to you being like, did you see Hawkinson's targets after getting traded to Minnesota? Mark Andrews is going to bounce back with a healthy Lamar Jackson. And now we're talking Kyle Pitts isn't even going top three, and he's entering year three. I mean, Kittle with some quarterbacks there. Evan Ingram was treated like a wide receiver, and he has Lawrence there. So, I mean, we're already to six tight ends, and then I could list, you know, 10 other sleepers, a lot of interesting young guys, Jelani Woods, Trey McBride, and whatnot, and my guy Chig. But I'm not going to fall for it. You just need to draft a bunch of them in best ball and ignore them in your redrafts because the position sucks. And it's just a hard, it's a battle of attrition. It is, it's a real tough position. So just load up on your receivers. And yeah, that's basically my takeaway is every year I fall for it. I'm like, this is the year it's going to be deep. And every year it's not.
I don't think it's going to be deep. I'm with you that I don't think we're going to have, I don't think we're going to have, you know, the debates in the offseason where, oh, well, what if this guy breaks out? What if that guy breaks out? Like somebody like the Chig Okonkwo or the Jelani Woods. One of those guys, I think we didn't get that last year, right? Like we didn't get the super athletic, like late round breakout, unless you want to count old Juwan Johnson at tight end 11 or Cole Kmet at tight end 7. But I'm not really going to count those. Pat Freiermuth at tight end 8. I mean, come on. But we're probably going to get one of those breakouts because we used to always get one. Think about like Logan Thomas or Darren Waller, even Travis Kelce back in the day, way, way back in the day. He was like that late round tight end athletic breakout. I think we get one of those guys, but like pretending there's going to be like four or five every year, I'm done with that. What I do disagree with you on, though, is that like I think the upper middle class of the position will be better this year. Like I think TJ Hawkinson can stabilize and get like 100, you know, like he had 172 points last year. That's perfectly fine for like the tight end 4 normally. I think George Kittle, if he stays healthy, could definitely stabilize a little. Mark Andrews, same thing. And then guys like Evan Ingram, like why can't Evan Ingram have a repeat performance of his year? And like that's perfectly fine for overall tight end 6. You know, guys like Dallas, I think the thing that we overlook is how many injuries were like how much injury was a part of the problem at tight end last year. And that's just not something that you can count on going forward. You know, Dallas Goedert got hurt last year. You know, Dalton Schultz, we bagged on him, but like he got hurt last year as well. You know, think about Zach Ertz. People like totally forget that Zach Ertz was an answer at tight end early on in the year before getting hurt. Even Kyle Pitts. Now, I know Kyle Pitts was frustrating last year, but he ended up getting hurt. Who's to say that Kyle Pitts couldn't have like stabilized his season in the second half of the year like Drake London did with better quarterback play? So I kind of disagree that I think this whole narrative that we need to get rid of tight ends or we need to merge them with wide receivers or any of that stuff. I'm definitely out on like pretending that there's going to be like 5 or 10 breakout guys like late in the draft and the tight end is deep. But I think the middle class, like the upper middle class of the position, could easily come back this coming season.
It's a fair counter. Maybe I'm overly pessimistic following such a down year. I mean, I did bring up those 5, 6 guys because, yeah, within their all of their range of outcomes is a really good season. I mean, Pitts, we keep waiting for. Mark. Yeah, I mean, it really, you could lay the narrative down for 5 or 6 of them. So
even David Njoku. Even David Njoku, 14 games.
Yeah, totally. And even Dallas Goedert really there too. So what if one of the Eagles receivers went down? I mean, he would suddenly be a monster. So yeah, even Dawson Knox quietly got some targets. So yeah, you could talk yourself into it. Here we go. Now you're trying to get me to again here, but injuries happen at the position. It seems abnormally high and it's just tough to live up to the seemingly every year of what we hope. But yeah, maybe I'm being overly harsh. And there, if you squint, you certainly could talk yourself into the position. I agree as far as let's not separate it. I think the position absolutely should still be on, you know, in fantasy terms. But yeah, it just perennially disappoints for based on entering because it's like every year I talk myself into it being like, man, there's so many interesting, intriguing breakout candidates and it just seemingly disappoints yearly.
I mean, you only need one, right? Like you only got to start one of them. It's not like wide receivers or running backs where we need tight end to be like 20 players deep. We need it to really be like
totally.
I sound like a political candidate, but like the destruction of the middle class really has been the biggest problem for tight end this past year. Because remember when it used to be like, okay, yeah, there was Gronk and Travis Kelce, but like Greg Olsen is a perfectly reliable pick in like the middle rounds. Zach Ertz, you know, he's like 100 years old. He's been around in that range too. Like we need that to sort of come back here. And I think again, if guys don't get hurt, like you mentioned, Dawson Knox only 15 games, Zach Ertz 10 games, David Njoku 14 games, Dalton Schultz 15 games, Dallas Goedert 12 games, Kyle Pitts, we know he got hurt. Darren Waller, dude, Darren Waller played 9 games. Like, if these guys, yeah, if these guys had stayed healthy this year, we are not, like, nobody serious is out here saying we should merge like wide receivers and tight ends. And I'm not just, I promise I'm not just saying this because I don't want to chart tight ends, and I'll never chart tight ends for reception perception. I promise that's not my only motivation here, but I do think the idea that we need to get away with the position is totally ridiculous. But again, it's Dalton, it's all about bringing back life to the middle class. At the tight end position.
Where are you taking Travis Kelce right now in early ADPs, fifth off the board, give or take?
I mean, I'm probably not taking him fifth, but like I still think he's definitely a first round pick. He had 261 points last year, and he could regress way off that and still be the top tight end, just not quite the unfair difference that he was last year from a touchdown standpoint. So I'm not taking him fifth or anything like that, but I'm not fading him either, if that makes sense.
It is crazy how much better he was than the next best tight end. But yeah, just 34 years old. I assume they're going to upgrade their targets there. But yeah, man, it's hard to argue with the production there, although he didn't score a touchdown the final 6 regular season games. But yeah, I mean, it's hard to argue with the production. But fifth overall for a tight end at 34 years old, I don't know. It won't be me.
Yeah, probably won't be me either. But that's just because I think there's so many good running back and receiver picks there to make that I probably won't be the one doing the Travis Kelce thing. But I can't talk you out of it either, because I don't think like there's any sign of decline. They're going to add somebody at the wide receiver position, but I don't think it's going to be like a huge needle mover. I think the fact that they won the Super Bowl with that cast of characters at wide receiver is only going to like validate the idea that they can get by with like a substandard receiver core, which I think is totally plausible at this point.
Yeah, I'd be remiss if I didn't bring up a graph, but did you see, before we go, did you see the try? I think it was Warren Sharp did it, but of all the different defenses that opposing defenses threw at Mahomes this year, go look at the Twitter thread. It's pretty impressive. That it's just, they have the answer, the cheat code there. It's just, they have all the answers no matter what you throw at them. So yeah, again, Kelce, the number one target with Mahomes throwing to him and Andy Reid calling up the plays. I mean, yeah, it's he, maybe he'll do this until he's 40. I mean, it's tough to defend, and the Chiefs are impressive, and the rest of the league is going to have to come up with some answers, because for them to do that without Tyreek Hill is just remarkable.
It's insane, man. Tough thing to defend there. All right, that's going to do it for us. Dalton, what are you working on that the people can check out? I know you're like knee deep in baseball at this point.
I am. I just had a Park Factors column come out, and I'm going to have some betting columns come out later this week. So check it out. I got some futures. So they'll probably end up getting really close to winning any money and then failing ultimately like usual. But I have thoughts. So if you're a degenerate like myself, look out for a couple columns later this week.
Ringing endorsement there. They'll get you close and fail like always. That's how you really sell your stuff there, Dalton. That's great. If you don't already, you got to make sure you're following Dalton on Twitter. He's due for his monthly tweet anytime now. I can get you from annual to monthly, I think, at this point, Dalton. Maybe. That's at Dalton Del Don. You can follow him. You can follow me at Matt Harmon _BYB. And while you're there, it's always a good time to follow at Yahoo Fantasy. I'm going to be back later this week to talk with Frank Schwab about all the NFL coaching changes and how they might impact current players on that roster. Until then, we're out.